All right, welcome back to the Bible Class Debrief with Micah and Tim, and we are on lessons 4.1 and 4.2, which they just finished teaching only moments ago. Maybe a few more than a moment. They had to drive here. But that's Genesis 34 and 35, Jacob's family in the land, and then Joseph's dreams and his betrayal by his brothers in Genesis 37. All right. So, did you guys squeeze all this into your 40-minute class? How did it go?
I actually way over condensed. I was a little worried about the time, and we'd had a little kerfluffle in the schedule, and I still had the same amount of time for my class because of the way the scheduling worked out. But I don't know why I was sort of mentally geared up. I was like, I might need to cover this quickly. So I hit like 20 minutes in and had covered the whole arc. I had Joseph in Egypt. I'm like, whew, all right. So now we're going to go back and add some color commentary. I had to go back and kind of come over it again from a more devotional angle, which is a rough way to do a lesson, but there we are.
How about you, Mike? Are you doing the same thing?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I did the exact same thing. Like, I was kind of like, okay, here we go. And I think probably I just had PTSD from like last week where we had like 10 minutes to do the whole class, or a few weeks ago. But yeah, I got into it about 20 minutes and was like, well, that's all of the story I was going to cover. So then we went back and kind of like, yeah, took a lot of time in the practical application stuff. So.
Well, that's good. That gives us a kind of a good lens to approach this from, splitting it up between the flyover story version and then the color and application version. So what are the high points that you hit in 4.1, Jacob's family in the land?
Well, for me, the big one was viewing these events through the lens of God's blessing to Abraham. That this is Abraham's family. God's called them out. He's told them, you're going to be a blessing to all the families of the world. And it turns out that, like, but you wouldn't want to live next door to him.
Yeah. You might not live next door to them very long.
You can live next door to this family, just for how long? Yeah. And so covering the rape of Dinah as the inciting incident and helping my students get their heads around what Simeon and Levi did in response to that, mm-hmm. was not a straightforward, you raped our sister and now we're going to kill you kind of deal.
Right.
It was, you raped our sister and we're going to smile and say nice things. And of course you can marry her and we'll, you know, but there's just a thing where you have to do this circumcision thing. And then the guy goes, and I want to be a fly on the wall. Like, he goes back to the village and talks every man in the village into it.
Yeah.
Like, how does that work? Yeah. That had to be a really interesting conversation. Which means, like, as far as God is concerned, they just joined the family of Abraham. That's the sign of the covenant.
Yeah.
So Simeon and Levi, then when they go into the village and kill all the men and sell all the women and children into slavery, they are not, they're killing their brothers. They just adopted everybody.
Right.
And now they're killing them. And then, like, we move out of that chapter into the setup for the next chapter, or for the next event in the story. And Reuben, P.S. So sons number 2 and 3 are plainly not fit to rule. Son number 1 sleeps with his father's concubine, and Judah and Joseph are contemporaries, mm-hmm. and Joseph's the favorite. So, and these are the kinds of guys who kill their brothers.
Right.
So you can see the storm clouds gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Dinah doesn't have great options at this point, but they also just destroyed all of the, like, all of the options that she had.
Yeah.
And left her in a position where she's just dependent on the goodwill of her brothers for the rest of her life, forever. And these are not the kinds of guys you would want to be dependent on their goodwill.
No. All right, Micah, what did you do with it?
Yeah, I hit on similar points. We talked about how, you know, this thing has just happened to their sister and they're really mad about it. And their first instinct is not to, like, seek the counsel of God and say, like, okay, how do we do this? Their first instinct is to act from anger. And so they do this thing where everyone has to be circumcised. And then, you know, basically what I talked also about, how what circumcision would have meant for them is, like, they're joining the family of Abraham now.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and kill everyone while they're, like, recovering from that. And so the point that I hit on here mostly was, rather than being motivated by, or rather than making decisions based on, like, seeking God, like, how do we do this? Like, obviously it wasn't okay. They just go and retaliate and let anger, like, motivate them instead of asking God. And then we talked about how after that, like, they're no longer seen as a trustworthy family to have in the land, and they're really powerful. And if people see this powerful family, like, living in the land with all of their wealth and all of their servants and things that God has blessed them with, like, and then also they might just randomly kill you. People are not going to feel safe with that and want to probably get rid of them. And so God has them go back to Bethel after that, or Bethel, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm not sure. And then, you know, when they're back there, like, I'm sure being there would have been a reminder of, you know, God's promises to them, and, like, God calls them to put away their idols. And then, like, the practical application I brought from that is, like, I think sometimes that happens in our walk with God. Like, we have a season where we walk away from God, we do things our own way. And sometimes God's response to that is to take us back into a season where we have to go back to the places, metaphorically, where God, like, promised things to us, and God, like, encountered us, right?
Mm.
And we have to, like, have a season where we put away our idols and, like, focus on the things God's done for us. At least I know that's happened in my own life. I feel like that's a thing God does sometimes. So, yeah, that's kind of the points I hit on mostly with 4.1.
Mm, that's good. Tim, did you touch on the move to Bethel? And
yeah, this is God's deliverance. I mean, God's also calling the note due. Jacob made a vow. He's right. Been back in the land for a while. He's doing okay for himself. He has not been eager to pay up. So God calls it due, but God calls, there's this really interesting verse where it says God put the dread of them on all the cities of the land. So they leave Shechem, a smoking ruin, pick up and travel to Bethel. And instead of banding together to exterminate them, everybody's kind of just afraid to move as they go by, which is absolutely an act of God. It would have made total sense to exterminate them. What promise could they possibly make you that you could trust at this point? So God preserves them and calls them back. Yeah. I didn't take it in the personal direction that you did. That's really good. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I just set that up as the deliverance that then sets the stage for the next screw up.
Okay, so that takes us through chapter 35. And then I see 4.2 jumps to 37. So we story over 36. I don't remember what 36 is, but apparently it's not in the list.
It's the family of Esau, so yeah, we skip that.
Okay. All right, so 37 is Joseph's dreams and his betrayal. What'd you do with this, Tim?
I set up, I mean, they know this story, right? Joseph, the coat of many colors.
Right.
So I set that up and I just asked him to start with, you know, you've heard the story a million times, Joseph, coat of many colors, sold to slavery in Egypt. Like, you know, all that. Let's talk about what it means. What does the coat of many colors mean? What does it mean that his father gave it to him?
Right.
It took a while to sort of perk through. But basically it means he's management, not labor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a family of shepherds and dad just gave him really nice clothes that you don't use when you're going out to mess with the sheep.
Yeah.
So dad is expressing a preference and, you know, we've just been through a set of events where Reuben has incurred, Simeon and Levi have incurred dad's disfavor about, and Joseph's grounds for objection were not like, were entirely pragmatic. Like, the people of the land are going to kill us now. You did not think this through, boys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a not fit to rule kind of objection. So sons 2 and 3 disqualified themselves. And then at the end of that chapter, son number 1 disqualifies himself. Joseph and Judah are roughly contemporary and dad has a clear favorite. And dad gives him, you know, everybody else is going to work in a t-shirt and jeans and dad gives him a suit and tie.
Now, did you have to explain this? Because normally the way the story is told is Joseph is the youngest. And people think of Joseph as the little tiny boy.
Brother.
And, you know, I think we kind of established in the curriculum that chronology doesn't quite fit the events. And he probably is more in the middle with Judah there. Did you have to do any corrective with that? I mean, they're familiar with the story, but Joseph being the little favorite, you know, it's a little bit different than what's going on
than the story we're telling. Yeah. I didn't really have anybody raise it.
Mm.
And I just said, when you get to looking at the chronology and trying to work all of this out, you know, it looks like he's roughly the same age as Judah. And so now, you know, now the question is who's next? And dad's sending a pretty good signal here. And they all hate him for it. And the dreams don't help. And he's a jerk about the dreams. Joseph is also an idiot. Like, in this family, the way this family is.
Yeah.
He gets up one morning and over breakfast, the best thing he can think of to say is, "Hey guys, I had a dream last night where you all bowed down to me." Only it's not even quite that transparent. It's, "Here's the dream I had," which obviously means that. What do you think it means? So of course they hate him. And then, you know, and dad has sent the signal that he's management, not labor, and sends his brothers out with the flocks and then sends him to check on them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having these dreams about how he rules the roost. It's impossible. Like, of course they're trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And I mean, Simeon and Levi are killers. Okay, what would Simeon do if he really, really hated you? Well, it's not like we have to guess about this, is it?
Right.
What if you were his brother? Ah, doesn't change much, as it turns out.
We tested that. Okay, how about you, Micah?
Yeah, I hit on a lot of the similar points. I did spend a little bit of time talking about how Joseph probably was like the fourth child and similar to the same age as Judah. And I never noticed that until like reading the chapter you guys wrote on that. And because I always grew up with like the VeggieTales version where like Junior plays Joseph, you know,
right.
And all the other guys are way taller, and like that's how I always thought of it. And so like it was really interesting, like paying attention to this story in context with the story right before it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, like that's his older brothers, you know. Yeah. That's what they're used to. And something we spent a lot of time on is like how this points back to Cain and Abel, you know, this idea of seeing your own failures, and seeing someone who's doing something better than you are and like resenting them for that. Like that's a real human emotion. And when you start to think about it like that, like it starts to make sense. Like, cause I always thought like, man, what's wrong with these brothers? Like they just hate his little brother and like that kind of sucks. But this idea that like we as people like do this all the time where maybe we see someone like who just seems like a better Christian than us, you know, and it's easy to start to have those like resentments, or maybe they're just like a better, well-behaved like sibling, you know, and you want to retaliate against that. And so you can start to see like why they hated him, and he probably reminded them of their failures. And then on top of that, like he gets this coat where it's another reminder, like that he, like he's the dad's favorite and he's the one right. like who's actually living an upright life. And something one of my students point out is he must have worn his coat all the time because they take his coat like when they, you know, when they take it, when they, as one of my students said, chuck him into a hole. Like, you know, so he's wearing this coat all the time. And like, it's clear that, you know, he's the one that's gonna, and we talked a little bit about what that coat means. Like he's getting the authority that traditionally the oldest sibling would get. So yeah, those are kind of the points that I hit on.
Yeah. Okay. And then anything, cause we kind of got through the Joseph, going out to check on his brothers. Did you have anything specific to say about the actual ambush and chucking them in a hole portion and how that all played out?
Well, it's a really interesting Reuben. I mean, it's something, a testament to how this is one of those things we don't think about that are there. Reuben is afraid. Like he doesn't want Joseph to be killed, but he's afraid to stand up to his brothers.
Yeah.
And we tend to like lily-livered Reuben, the oldest brother won't stand up to his little brothers and protect baby brother Joseph. Simeon and Levi are like killers. And yeah, they kind of had an edge, but they did actually kill a whole village full of people.
Yeah.
Like these are, he has reason to be afraid of them. These are stone cold killers. And he's a little like, they've got their hearts set on killing Joseph, and he doesn't think he's got the juice to stop him.
Right.
And it thinking it through in that way is like, this is quite a bit more, these are very dangerous people. And so he's doing what he sees as the best he can do to, he's going to circle back around and let Joseph out later. And then as everybody's sitting down to lunch with their brother in a hole, the Ishmaelites, and this is great. Like who's Ishmael? Where does this show up in the story? Like, Esau has an Ishmaelite wife who is a grief to his mother. The Ishmaelites show up just again, just in time to, on the one hand, save Joseph's life, which is kind of nice. And on the other hand, make him disappear.
Well, then you get some money for the guy.
Right, exactly.
Plus, you don't, you know he's probably going to die anyway, but you don't have to kill him.
First of all, yeah, it starts off with let's kill him, and then it's like, guys, why would we get blood on our hands? That would be awful. We can't have blood on our hands. Let's leave him in a hole to die of thirst. That's much better. And then over lunch, hey, what if we sell him, pocket the money, and then we get rid of him and we get paid? And he's down in the hole listening to this conversation. Listening to his brothers discuss what to do with him. Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. Yeah, have anything on that?
I basically portion? Just told the story. I didn't add anything to it.
All right. Well, this all sets us up well for Joseph and Judah coming of age in foreign lands and the story of Joseph in Egypt. So we will cover that stuff in coming episode or episodes yep. of the Bible Class Debrief.
So before we wrap, the devotional gloss
oh, yeah.
that in my class we took on this, we circled back through and, okay, so talk to me about this family. What do you think? And I've got a child in my class that is one of 12. Like, how would you feel about going home if this was your family? You're like, no. this is really messed up. This is a mess. This is terrible. And we have people sinning and people sinned against. Joseph's worst crime here really is being a jerk with the dreams God gave him.
Yeah.
Those were not like, I'm sure that was to prepare him, but it was not, you know, I'm very sure God wasn't giving him that to rub in his brothers' faces. And yet then people commit life-altering sins against him.
Yeah.
We are sinning and sinned against, and both of those in life-altering ways. This is particularly important in right in this age group because they're starting to hit that point where they can do some yeah. things that really do. It's hard to sin in life-altering ways when you're 2.5. but as you start to hit that middle school, high school, you get into places where you have enough power over your life to do that. And that's a good thing. We want that. But know that you're not going to always do it well. And when you blow it, there will be a moment where you look back at something you just did and realize that's probably the worst thing I've done in my life ever. And I'm going to be a long time living with the consequences of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is one of the stories you want to remember when that happens. God is still at work here, and we're going to see his hand continue to work through all of the awful things that are happening.
Yeah. Good. Anything to add, Micah? Devotionally?
Yeah, we talked a lot about like sibling relationships, and I know these kids and I know some of their siblings. So I was like, this will be relevant. nice. But so we just talked about like, you know, what are things that kind of keep us from like getting along with our siblings, and what are things that we can bring to God's throne, you know, rather than just letting anger control us, and making decisions out of anger. And so I actually did like a little bit of listening prayer time with them. Just like, all right, we're just going to pray. And I just want you guys to like ask God to show you, like, are there things in your life that are keeping you from having a good relationship with your sibling? And you don't have to say it out loud. But just like, see if God brings anything to mind. And then I want you to just bring whatever it is that you feel like he's showing you, to him and ask him to heal that. So we did that for like a few minutes.
Cool. Yeah. That's great. Nice. Good. All right. Now we'll end it for real. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time on Bible Class Debrief.